Hey everyone, welcome to Culture Time. It's episode 8. We're talking about The Matrix during season 2.
We've approached the lodestone of Keanu's career.
I'm Hemel Javeri with Brian Minter.
Hello everybody, welcome. Glad to be back with you in Hemel's lavishly appointed podcasting studio talking about the vast cultural millstone that is The Matrix.
What a phenomenal film.
It was a phenomenal film, an iconic film.
We have a lot to get into because this movie hits so many different points. Not only is it just the resurgence of Keanu Reeves' career, but it became such a cultural metaphor. Is this the right word?
I think it brought a lot of new visual and thematic thinking into popular culture.
I don't think that it's unfair to say that it was a groundbreaking work.
I do not think it's unfair at all. And I'm interested in this discussion we're about to have because, as you know, our shared project is interrogating the American culture through the oeuvre of one Keanu Reeves. In the movies we've discussed so far, I feel like sometimes we're just basically talking about the movie. And there often isn't a whole lot to say about what does this tell us about Keanu Reeves. This movie, I think, is not only possibly the most popular, influential, everything we've discussed, I think it is possibly the key to unlocking Keanu.
That's a lot. This is going to be a very heavy episode.
We're going down the rabbit hole.
We're going down the rabbit hole. But before we get too far down the rabbit hole, let's hit the basics. I can't imagine that anybody is not familiar with The Matrix, and if you have not seen it...
Spoiler alerts! They were in tubs of goo all along, with their brains plugged into the TV.
So, the plot, basically...
Yes, what happens in The Matrix?
God, this is... We're already starting early with the interruptions.
My apologies.
All right. Keanu Reeves is a programmer, and for the life of me, I cannot remember his real name. Before, he's Neo.
He's Thomas Anderson because Hugo Weaving, Agent Smith, calls him Mr. Anderson throughout the film. That's the only way you could remember it.
Got it. I missed that key little bit. Anyway, he's a regular computer programmer.
He's a wage slave, man. He's just toiling away in a faceless office tower.
And then one day, a bunch of weird-looking people come up to him and tell him that he's the one and leads to a series of adventures. Basically, he finds out that we are living in a digital simulation that's run by incredible AI machines. And that's pretty much where the first Matrix movie ends.
Yeah, and I remember the marketing campaign for this was, what is The Matrix? It's going to blow your mind. And 99% of the time, if you are faced with that marketing campaign, it is bullshit. Because when you watch the movie, you're like, oh, it's exactly the thing I thought it was going to be. But I remember sitting in the theater, I don't know, however old I was, in my early 20s, and actually having my mind blown. Like, oh shit, that's what The Matrix was. I didn't see that coming.
So the movie came out in 1999, just to give you more context, directed by the Wachowski brothers. At the time, the Wachowski brothers. Right now, the Wachowski sisters.
Yeah, the Wachowski sisters, yes.
And it was nothing of the sort had really been done before.
Yeah, or really since. As much as it has been imitated in so many ways. Going back to it, I mentioned this to you. I had seen it many times, as you have as well. And I was like, well, I should rewatch it just so it's fresh. And I watched the whole thing, and I was taking notes, and I was super into it. And my wife was going to watch it with me, but fell asleep. And the next night, she's like, I want to finish watching it after all. And so she started from the beginning, and I watched the entire thing again, 2 nights in a row.
And you still liked it.
Yeah, I was enthralled. I forgot how great it was.
Okay,
Why are you making a face?
Because I don't know if I agree with that. It's not that I don't think the movie is good, because it's definitely well above par for so many of the other films that we have watched. But... I don't think that on subsequent rewatchings it actually held up. It didn't have the same impact that it did before.
Well, that seems wrong, I have to say. Incorrect.
I know, I'm sorry. My subjective views are absolutely wrong.
What about it didn't hold up for you?
We talked about this a little bit before, but I think it's that so much of The Matrix has become so subsumed in our culture, just the metaphor of the Matrix, the style that you see in the film.
Yeah, every car commercial has bullet time
exactly,
in it for a while there.
That now the Matrix itself feels derivative, even though it was the first movie to actually do all these things.
Yeah, I would love to hear from someone who saw it, you know, someone maybe who's in their 20s now who saw it for the first time recently.
Yeah.
And yeah, does it seem fresh or interesting, having seen all of its children, you know, crowding up your visual field for so long?
I wanted to ask you, has it aged well?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's some stuff in it, like the technology is very dated, like the flip phones and the glowing green ASCII text. But like the vibe of it, like the fashion of it, this really dark, stylized, almost cartoonish noir feel, like I feel like that works great. All of the like dumb sunglasses and trench coats, they're so over the top that it exists outside of time. Like even the city where it's set, it's not supposed to be any particular city.
Right, it's just a general big metropolis.
Yeah, I think it was actually filmed in Australia, right? I think that city
is
Sydney. Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
But it doesn't matter. Like, it's deliberately not any place.
I absolutely disagree with that.
What?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I do, and I swear this is not to be contrarian, but I was going...
Are you disagreeing that it was set in Sydney?
No. I'm disagreeing that what you said about how the costumes and all those things have aged well because they felt so out of time. I think that's the stuff that has aged the worst.
The mid-90s cyberpunk vibe?
Yeah, the
mid-90s thing.
With the glasses, the sunglasses and the slicked back hair and the long dark trench coats feel so absolutely dated and of that time period. The parts that held up for me were the parts where Neo is outside the Matrix. That feels definitely more organic.
Oh, the kind of aliens,
when they're in the space
goo...
Well, not the
real
aliens.
World.
The real world. Like when they're in the spaceship and it's, you know, steel plates and everybody's wearing drab gray clothing. That stuff has aged very well.
I meant the movie Alien because it was that
Sorry.
There was that, I mean, like sci-fi movies were all about like gleaming surfaces and robots for so long.
Yes.
And then with Alien and movies like The Matrix that has this very like gritty, lived in, kind of bleak, deliberately bleak vibe. But I did think that like all the trench coats and the glasses and all that stuff, I thought it was so deliberately stylized that it was like, you know, it was like a snow globe. It wasn't supposed to be. It wasn't like, hey, this is how we were dressing in 92. It was just in this fake place, this is how they dress.
It feels very affected. I don't know.
It
I don't like it. It's
sure.
very affected, and I did not like it. So to your original point, you mentioned in there that the movie doesn't hold your hand through a lot of these concepts. And the interesting thing to me about The Matrix is that it pairs really modern things like technology and kind of the digital angst that we have with old school Eastern philosophy. Like these are the two things that are melding together.
Yeah. What I think is shows the lasting influence of this movie and why it was so popular. Well, one of the reasons why it was so popular is there's this, it's not particularly obscure, but if you're into philosophy or you have any kind of academic or intellectual grounding, this idea of the self as being fundamentally immaterial, that's not new to you. But I think that idea is not that common. It's not, you know, on the back of every McDonald's cup. You know, it's a philosophical concept a lot of people wouldn't necessarily have been familiar with. And the movie leans really hard into it, and it uses it as the central metaphor for this, you know, kick-ass science fiction action movie. So you can see why people dug it, right? Because it was genuinely showing them something or you know, poking part of their brains that, you know, your average sci-fi or action movie does not try to poke.
And I'm assuming that they just hadn't read Plato's The Cave, right? They hadn't read The Allegory of the Cave.
I haven't read The Allegory of the Cave. People don't read Plato. People don't read...
You didn't take Philosophy 101?
I did, but I don't remember it. I wasn't paying attention. I was 19, like everyone else who went to college.
Oh, so you're saying you were doing cool things when you were 19 and not reading philosophy?
I don't even remember.
Anyway, yes, I think that it's all of those things. It's the crazy technology wrapped up with complicated concepts. I don't even want to say spoon-fed, but delivered in a very accessible way.
Yeah, used to tell a cool story. And like the way they bring like the metaphor of the Matrix, which smuggles this sort of philosophical concept into, you know, this sort of high concept modern movie. But that metaphor also lets the filmmakers just do all kinds of cool shit, right? Like, there's this great, like, scene where Keanu's first learning to fight in the Matrix, and him and Lawrence Fishburne are in this dojo.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vibe of the movie completely changes. Right. They're wearing these, you know, sort of, like, traditional sparring outfits. The music changes. You get that kind of, like woodblock Kodo sound. The camera pulls away. Even, like, the camera is working a little bit differently. Later, there's a shot, or there's a sort of opening scene where Keanu finally fights Agent Smith. And you get this Old West, Wild West movie montage, right? Yep. You hear this, like, noise, and, like, some tumbleweeds blow by, and there's even, like, the sound of, like, a gun cocking or something. So they create this visual language and this cinematic language for how their world works, and they use it to pull in just anything that interests them, but they've made a way for it all to be coherent.
Right, you said they made a language for the film, and they taught us what that language is.
Exactly.
How was The Matrix perceived when it first came out?
It was, I didn't really remember. I mean, it was a commercial success. I went back and looked at kind of the contemporaneous reviews. And they're mostly good, but they don't take it that seriously. Like, there's no sense like, whoa, this is a big deal. And then I noticed, like, going back recently, like, people have been writing about it more in the last couple years because it's about to turn 20. And there's a lot of, like, it was so big, it's the biggest deal. So there's a little bit of, like, critics covering their asses or, like, you could even find a reviewer's original review and it's like, oh, this is a fine sci-fi movie now. Like, oh, the groundbreaking, iconic Matrix that we all love so much.
I mean, I remember enjoying it quite a bit. Part of it had to do with the uncertainty of Keanu Reeves in the film.
Yeah, where was Keanu in the national consciousness in 1999?
This is definitely Keanu's comeback film.
This is the Keanu sans.
We have... As you and I have discussed, there was a period early in his career where he was riding high with Point Break, with Speed.
Right, he was an action hero.
He was an action hero. Then comes a series of not great films for him.
The ill-fated rom-com valley into which he wandered.
Some of those, but his career, you know, Keanu did Speed in 1991, 1992, and then he didn't do a lot. And The Matrix is a huge gamble because of all the things that you said. It's incredibly complicated. It's super dense. It's got all these philosophical concepts in it. And it's basically a kung fu movie.
He loves kung fu.
He does. But this is
where his love of kung fu comes from,
yes,
I think.
This is. This is where his love of kung fu comes from. But what it does is it becomes a huge commercial success and makes Keanu relevant again.
Yes. He was the big deal.
He was very much the big deal.
So I read a little bit about the backstory of the film and... The four leads, Keanu Reeves, Carrie Ann Moss, Lawrence Fishburne, and Hugo Weaving, all had to do 4 months of fight training before the filming started. And I saw this, I read this little, it was either I read it or saw an interview with him talking about how into that he was. He was so, like, when he met with the Wachowskis, they're like, well, you need to do this. And he's like, great. Like, that, just knowing that they wanted him to do 4 months of fight training sealed the deal for him. And he badly injured his back and couldn't actually kick. For most
really?
Of the, yeah. So the fight choreographer sort of developed like a fighting style for each of those four leads and developed Keanu's to be very punch heavy because his back was so swollen he couldn't do a lot of kicking.
I did not know that.
Yep. A little behind the scenes movie magic action for you.
Well, this does play to something that we have said about Keanu all along, which is that one of his main strengths is his physicality. And there is a lot of that in this film.
We have identified Keanu's main strengths as an artist as...
Unflappability,
likability, and hair.
And hair.
And then we often talk about his skills as a physical actor. How do you feel Keanu, as the center of this film, how do you feel he is?
This is a very good question. I'm not sure I've arrived on a yes or no. He's supposed to be a neutral canvas here, and he's very neutral. Can you answer that? Because I'm not sure. I kind of want to say he's fine.
This movie would have been vastly different with anybody else in it.
See, I've been struggling with this, and I'm getting super existential because I'm like, does this movie need to star Keanu Reeves?
I cannot, like some of the other films we've watched,
yeah.
We've even talked about, you know, alternate casting choices, and it would have been better, would have been worse. This one, though, I literally cannot imagine it with anyone else.
Well, I can't either. That's the thing, is that I can't imagine anybody else in it as well. But there is a blankness to him, and I know Keanu does blank very well.
He does blank very well. He does mannerisms,
yeah.
He does kung fu, and he moves around. So this is a great vehicle for him.
It's a very good vehicle for him, and I can't imagine anybody else in this role.
So one of the reasons why I think he is great as the protagonist of this film is that this is very much a science fiction film. And, you know, if you're a science fiction nerd, as I am, people use this phrase a lot, that science fiction is the literature of ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's often not as important about what a character is going through or someone's internal landscape. It's about the author using whatever metaphor the author is grappling with, using that to transmit an idea to the reader,
mm-hmm.
which The Matrix is 100% doing. The Matrix
yes.
is all about the filmmakers have their brains are about to explode with all the ideas they've got. They manage to stuff them all in one movie. Keanu is a great lead actor for that, right? Because it doesn't really matter what he's going through internally. It's not so much like there's this external journey he's going on of understanding, but he's the audience, right? Like he's figuring out shit as it happens. Nothing's being really explained to him, just like it's not being explained to us. And we don't want an actor who's going to have meaningful glances and who's going to want to, you know, a monologue about what they're... Keanu doesn't want any of that stuff. He's not good at any of that stuff. The stuff he's great at is perfect for Neo.
And that's the thing, is that I agree with all of these points, but there's no real connection to the character for all the reasons that you just said. Because he
is
such a...
But the movie's not about a character.
And that's the point, right?
Yeah.
It is, in a sense, yes, Neo is the main character, but the movie is not about him at all,
it's
really.
It's about this idea and this world and what is happening.
Exactly. The Matrix is about The Matrix. There's a reason that it's not called Neo or The One, right? It is about The Matrix.
Yes.
And for that reason, it's very... I wouldn't say that I was connected to Keanu in this film. Whereas if we're talking about The Lake House, there is... you're invited.
We're not.
No, but you're invited to connect to Keanu. And here, this is very much about just The Matrix and the ideas surrounding Neo, who is...
He's the taxi cab that is moving through the crowded city streets
yes.
of the film. And you are in the taxi cab.
Let's talk about the one thing in this film that I did not think worked at all.
The flip phones?
No, I thought the flip phones were fine.
The green glowing text?
No, I thought that was fine, too.
The trench coats.
It's a little dated now.
Hmm.
The love story.
Ah, the love story.
Love story.
Yeah, all right. So how did you feel? How did you feel the love story didn't work? And the love story is, of course, Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss as Trinity.
Yes, Keanu, Trinity. It does not work because it just does not need to be there at all.
Yeah, it's an oddly like corny, sentimental note. And for those of you that don't remember, you know, Morpheus, who is the Lawrence Fishburne mentor character, believes Neo, Keanu Reeves' character, to be the one who is
right.
prophesied to bring, you know, enlightenment and victory and blah, blah, blah. And Trinity has been given a prophecy of her own. There's this mysterious program called the Oracle that, you know, helps them out for no discernible reason. And the Oracle once told her that when the one came along, she would fall in love with him. And she does fall in love with him, so she knows he's the one, and she kisses him back to life. And yeah, I agree. It's an off note.
And it's all totally circular reasoning, right? Is he the one because I fell in love with him, or did I fall in love with him because he's the one? There's so much in this film already that the scenes between both of them completely screech to a halt. And they don't really work because, like I said, you're not really invited to connect to Keanu.
Yeah, you don't care if Neo and Trinity love each other
exactly.
or get together.
You barely know them. There's no real investment in their romantic relationship. And it's a bummer that the movie and the subsequent sequels lean so heavily into it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is probably so hard to sell to a studio anyway. They're like, look, there's gonna be a love story right at the middle. Love it. I'd be interested to know if that was true. Well, how did you feel Keanu and Carrie Ann Moss were, what was their chemistry? Like, were they good together? I agree, the story doesn't make a ton
right.
of sense.
Jesus Christ. I thought that they were both so utterly flat and without any chemistry. Is it just me or do they look exactly alike? was like, is he making out with a mirror?
They
what
both
is
have a
happening?
Certain, like, yeah, like chisel-jawed androgyny.
They both have very pale skin, narrow faces, and sharp features and short hair. And I was like, it's like watching a dude make out in a mirror.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's not. They don't have great chemistry. You're right.
They don't have great chemistry. I think Carrie Ann Moss, had she not been relegated to love interest, like, they give her a lot to do, but the fact that part of her purpose is to be a love interest.
I mean, I feel like her character would work fine if you just cut the love interest plot out.
Just cut it out. Just have her be support, and that would be great.
That one thing Keanu's given to do in this movie that he does not excel at is, selling this love story. And she doesn't really sell it. Like, I don't even believe that she's that into him or why she's that into
him.
And
she's like, gets into him super right away.
Yeah, they have no real time to bond as people.
Before we move on to Carrie Ann Moss, I do want to say something about the context of this and bring it back to the lake house.
Why would you want to bring it back to the lake house of all things?
No, but because part of it is
Sandra Bullock would have been terrible in this movie if that's where you're going.
No, I think that this has to do with the fact that Keanu is just not a very good romantic character. Like, he never does romance well, even when it's like a tertiary part of his role.
As you discovered in our watching and discussing at the lake house, Keanu plays weird characters very well. Yeah. He does not play conventional characters successfully.
He doesn't. And I feel like he has more chemistry with Morpheus. He and Lawrence Fishburne have like
they
more
have, yeah, they have great
like
chemistry.
An intense
yeah.
like dynamic than him and Carrie Ann
Moss.
That's
the real romantic heart of this movie.
But yes, let's talk about Carrie Ann Moss.
Well, so you mentioned Morpheus. Yes. Lawrence Fishburne, like, I love his, like, the movie makes Morpheus really cool, but I think Lawrence Fishburne brings, like, he could have done it as this, like, super badass, but he doesn't. He's this, like, almost like, you know, this sort of Zen, blissed out, vaguely Matthew McConaughey-esque character. And then Keanu, of course. And then Hugo Weaving is unbelievable as Agent Smith. He has this, like, ludicrous speech pattern.
Oh,
he's just, like, comically sinister and over-portentous. There's that great scene where he's interrogating and torturing Morpheus, and he's like almost licking his face, and he's like rubbing the sweat, and he says, "I hate this place, this zoo," and he just like chomps the word. He's fantastic. So the three of them turn in fantastic performances, and then the fourth lead is Carrie Ann Moss's Trinity.
Right.
And I think she does a great job too, right? Like, she's like this...
I do.
The action driver of much of the film. Yet, the three men have gone on to enormous careers. I never saw her in anything else again. Not even an episode of Law and Order.
That was my takeaway as well, which is that I don't know if Carrie Ann Moss was a victim of the studio system or the fact that she played Trinity too well and was typecast as too tough.
Yeah, it's a very like tough, cold character.
Right.
She's not like conventional. She doesn't have like long hair or anything like that.
No, and she's not given a lot of warmth and a lot of traditional femininity.
No,
and
very much
I wonder if her being so good as Trinity made it so that she actually did not get any other roles.
She's in one of those, and it struck me because it was such a small role. She's in one of those, what was that, one of the worst of the Marvel superhero TV shows on Netflix, Iron Fist.
Oh, I haven't seen
it. She plays like a lawyer, and she's in like a couple episodes for a little bit. And and watching this again, I was like, oh, right, she's actually really good in this role. She has a huge role in this one of like this huge movie blockbuster trilogy, and then nothing, gone.
Maybe Carrie Ann Moss just wanted to take a break from acting. Maybe she's just enjoying her Matrix residuals.
Maybe. So, speaking of, you touched on the androgyny of Carrie Ann Moss and Keanu, which I feel like leads us neatly to a major point of discussion for our podcast, Keanu's hair.
Ah.
What are your feelings about Keanu's hair in the film?
I think that Keanu has very good hair in this film.
He has great hair. He has great hair in The Matrix.
Yes. He has hair that is appropriate for the character that he is playing. And the hair does a lot of work for him.
The hair in The Matrix. And even when he just has stubble, he looks pretty good. Not every white guy looks good with very little hair, but he pulls it off.
So there's three levels, right? There is Keanu's hair in The Matrix, which is first when you see him and he's in The Matrix and he does not realize he's in The Matrix. It's regular guy hair.
Yeah.
And then
regular guy hair.
Regular guy
hair. It's not cool yet.
Nope. And then you have him when he is actually in the pot of goo, and he's bald. But then he wakes up from the pot of goo, and he goes into buzz cut mode, right? And then the fourth hair is when he is Neo.
Yeah.
When he is Neo.
Extremely cool hair.
And it's extremely cool hair.
Yeah, that hair is totally working. That hair tells you that this is a very cool guy who's going to kung fu you.
What in this film, what was the most Keanu moment for you in this film?
Oh, so I think the most Keanu moment is early in the movie when it still feels like a traditional thriller, right? He's he's at his cubicle wage slave job. He's delivered a phone. He answers, and he's like, "Hello, who's this?" And it's Morpheus. And Morpheus is like, "There's some men coming to get you, running across the hall." And it's a scene we've seen before. It may even be an homage to, you know, some older movie. I'm not a film guy. But it feels very traditional. And Keanu's like, "Whoa, what's going on?" And there's even a moment when he says, "No way!" And you can hear like Ted Theodore Logan saying that line. It's so Keanu.
And the thing is that when he is outside of the Matrix, when he does not realize that he's in the Matrix, he's very Keanu. He's very Keanu in all of those roles.
Oh, in the early, when he hasn't been
unplugged. In the very early,
yeah,
when he hasn't been unplugged and they haven't come at him with all these weird ideas.
He's like, "Yeah, all right."
That's mostly it. I liked the part where...
Yeah, what was your most Keanu moment for you?
Definitely the scene where he has to jump out the window and, like, walk along the ledge, which he actually did.
Oh, yeah, from the same scene, yeah.
Yeah, which he actually did. It's just, like, it's just right after that. And I think there's this look on his face when he knows he has to do it. And I was like, there's Keanu. There is that look.
There's a scene where they call it the jump program, where they, like, they're loading these different programs so he can kind of learn how the Matrix works without really going into it. And Morpheus jumps over a building.
Yes.
Again, trying to show Neo, like, hey, you know, normal physics don't apply here, even though you think they do. So he goes, "Okay, I'm going to do it. And he runs and he falls and he splats on the pavement a million stories below. In all those early scenes, as you say, he's just kind of doing his standard Keanu thing.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think the movie is using that well, right? Like, he's just your regular old guy, and he's super confused, and he's got his sort of quizzical face on.
Which Keanu
does so well. But later, he's not doing that at all. Later, he gets it. When Neo is kind of emerging as this superhero guy, he doesn't do any of that stuff anymore.
No.
He totally is into it.
And also, Neo is such a wet blanket. He's so serious.
Yeah, he's very grim.
He's very grim.
He doesn't even smile.
No.
Nothing makes him smile or makes him... Well, it's a grim situation. They're just floating around in this, spaceship in a sewer.
Exactly. He has no humor left whatsoever.
So one thing that, again, of the many things I love about this movie... There's this central metaphor, right, which is that, you know, what we believe to be our real existence is completely immaterial, and because it is a computer program, it can be manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very abstract concept, so what the movie does repeatedly and beautifully is it gives us all these things, and sometimes it goes overboard to, like, explain it to us, but it gives us all these things that the characters are manipulating that we understand are avatars for a different reality. Like, there's a little boy who bends the spoon with his mind in what is a very iconic scene. There is no spoon. Right. And the pills are another example, right? Like, what are the pills really? They're just two options for, you know, something. They're just two options, like data streams within this program. The visual metaphor of those programs are these two pills. And the pills, I don't know if you know this, have gone on to become a popular metaphor among the men's rights activists, incel, sort of hateful misogynist people on the internet.
Yes.
Again, I don't think that's anything that's in the movie, but it shows you how powerful some of the metaphors and analogies this movie gave to the culture and how they've been used for other things.
And these ideas have been exploited and repurposed for unintended consequences.
Yeah, like this movie gave people a bunch of new thought technologies,
yes,
and we have used them in various ways.
They've weaponized them in their in their own way, which I think is a real unfortunate consequence. And like you said earlier, it has nothing to do with the actual film. It's just that the ideas were made too accessible for idiots.
The central conceit there is you are laboring under this false consciousness.
Exactly.
You can be freed from it, which could apply to lots of things. And just this one particular set of assholes got the idea. But that's what makes the movie so powerful, like I was saying earlier. Like, it gives you these philosophical ideas and conceits packaged in this way that, you know, is kind of fun. It has a bunch of kung fu in it.
The things that you want movies to do is for people to take ideas and use them and internalize them, which The Matrix is fantastic with.
Yeah, and, like, think of, like, you're a big fan of Marvel movies.
I am.
I would say I am, too. there isn't a single even the best Marvel movies, no. They're just entertainment. That's all they're trying to be. Like, you're not learning anything you didn't know before.
No.
But with The Matrix, you are. And I think, and that's one thing I love about the Wachowskis.
And I think we've taken it for granted. I think that's where I am with The Matrix, is that I've taken it for granted. It's laid such a foundation that it is, it's become wallpaper. Like, it's always been there, when that was not the case.
Yeah, in every action movie now, everyone knows Kung Fu.
Yes.
Like, every single character in every fight movie knows Kung Fu. But prior to The Matrix, I don't think that was, like, the common metaphor for combat. Like, you know, Far Eastern Kung Fu fighting.
Oh, I did want to ask you, if you had a choice between the red pill or the blue pill, would you have taken it?
I don't know.
If Morpheus came up to you and was like, yo, Brian.
Neo is dissatisfied. I mean, Neo has sensed something that is wrong about the world in which he lives.
Right.
I don't think I would have been offered the pills. Would you have taken the blue pill?
I think I'm pretty close to being offered a pill, let me tell you. I am very dissatisfied. In the sequel, and I said we're going to touch on these a little bit, but in the sequel, we see some of Zion, and Zion is not as hellish as it looks in the original Matrix.
No, yeah, it's like a fun cave city.
Yeah, and they have like weird sex parties and raves and stuff like
that. Yeah, the sex party scene. I remember watching that.
Super weird.
I like the second movie a lot because I feel like it takes all these ideas from the first movie and it just keeps on going, like right up the hill with them.
Yes.
Right? Like there's
does
this,
not back down.
There's this scene in the Matrix, in the first one, where Keanu has deja vu. Like, he sees a cat and then he thinks he sees a cat again. And he's like, whoa, deja vu. And they're all like, whoa, what the hell? What did you just say? And he's like, oh, it's just deja vu. And like, nope, that's a glitch in the Matrix. They changed something. And that's great, right? It's taking this like kind of boring, commonplace thing and repurposing it. And the second movie is all about that, right? Like, there's everything we know from folklore, like ghosts and vampires and werewolves. That's all just like crazy programs. So it's all real. It's just Matrix shit.
It's funny that now a glitch in the Matrix is a cliche.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. It's true.
It's totally. Everybody says it now, and it's very much shorthand for.
So much stuff from this movie is just part of like the cargo cult of popular culture.
We have absorbed it so thoroughly that none of it feels original.
Yeah, like the main visual thing about this movie that was groundbreaking is, you know, what people call bullet time, right? This idea of like, you film a scene in slow motion, but the camera keeps moving at normal speed, which I think, and again, I don't think they did that just because it was cool. It was technically very difficult to do at the time. Like, I think that actually reinforces this idea of, like, the movie is all about consciousness and what does consciousness mean, and is our consciousness as straightforward and linear as we believe it to be?
Right.
The way the movie shows all these scenes, it's saying, nope, you know, you can stop time and look at it from different angles. We're flipping it around. Now, though, that's just, like, how people film fight scenes, because it's cool.
Because it's cool.
Yeah.
We've taken all of this, subsumed it, and watered it down to
we've
the point.
Macerated it, and we're spinning it back out as car commercials and, I don't know, Steven Seagal movies.
Hey, Steven Seagal. Oh, I want to ask you a question.
Is
this peak Keanu? Where does this fall in the Keanu canon?
This is the most Keanu of them. Of all the movies, this is the most Keanu.
I don't know if I believe that. To me, the most Keanu film is early 90s Keanu with Point Break and Speed. To me, that is peak Keanu. And this is...
this is the pinnacle of the mountain he began climbing.
That's true.
With Bill and Ted's and Point Break. This is where every strength he has as an actor is fully utilized. Every weakness he has as an actor is immaterial.
But it also tells us a lot about Keanu as an artist, because this is kind of a passion project. This is one of these weird films that nobody's sure whether or not it's going to be very good or totally flop.
Yeah, this wasn't like the Star Wars prequels and everyone's going to watch them no matter what.
This was very much a gamble, very much like an artistic risk, and something that he was like, oh, it's like it's Kung Fu and I'm going to have to be training for 4 months, and it deals with concepts of Eastern philosophy and consciousness and what is reality. I think it tells us a lot about him as an artist. Basically the same person who decided to make My Own Private Idaho.
Yeah, I agree. I think when as we've seen, like when Keanu Reeves is at his best as an artist, as a cultural figure, he is choosing things that are he is choosing to do things that he is not forced to do by his fame. He's choosing not to take the sort of Kevin Costner rom-com leading man sports movie path.
Right. But that's what makes us like him so much.
When he takes that path, he turns out.
It turns out well.
Not great. No, no. When he takes the other path.
Oh yeah, exactly.
He doesn't turn out great material.
No, he doesn't. Like
we
said before.
Hardball.
You can't make Keanu fit the movie. You've got to make the movie fit Keanu.
Yes, it's so true. It's like a rock garden strewn with petals.
All right, let's look ahead to episode 9, where I think we should talk about John Wick.
We are approaching the end of. We have decided to do 10 episodes
right,
of the Keanu season of Culture Time. You want to do John Wick next time, Brown?
Do you?
Join us next week on Culture Time, the all Keanu season, when we will be discussing the popular Keanu action thriller, John Wick, which you love and I have not seen.
And I want to go ahead and make a prediction and say that Brian is, one, not going to like the movie.
Really?
Two, Wendy's going to hate the film.
That was actually what I really want to talk about. So my wife, Wendy, who is the real victim of this podcast, in that she is forced to watch a constant series of Keanu Reeves movies, but does not get to podcast about them, abhors violence in film.
I don't think she should watch it, because I like Wendy a lot, and I can't put her through this.
All right, I'll watch it after she goes to sleep. You know, I will say in the there's a scene in The Matrix, one of the most iconic scenes. Neo and Trinity storm this office tower to rescue Morpheus, and they have like 30 guns,
right.
And they're fighting like 20 guys, and it's just a hail of masonry and bullets, and it's an orgy of violence.
Yes,
Wendy could not handle that scene; she was extremely wigged out by it. And yeah, she said she thought like unlike the rest of the movie, where the violence was. A, more cartoony, and B, in service to the plot, it felt very gratuitous in that scene.
It was very, very gratuitous. That, unfortunately, the gratuitousness of the violence has also been misread and misinterpreted.
Yeah, and it doesn't age well.
It does not age well.
Because in that scene, they're not fighting the agents who are sinister, evil programs. They're just fighting security guards.
Yeah. Anyway, with that in mind, don't let her watch John Wick.
All right. Wendy, if you're listening... I don't know if you listen to this podcast or not. Sometimes she does. You can't watch John Wick.
Just don't watch John Wick. All right, guys. Thank you for hanging out with us. And remember that you can subscribe on your podcast listening service of your choice and leave us a review so you can tell Brian and I what you think about Keanu Reeves.
Share it with your friends, man. This is good stuff. I listen to a lot of podcasts. A lot of them are terrible. They're poorly recorded. Hemel does a great job with the audio. You take great pride in making sure you have pristine, high-quality, artisanal audio to listen to. There's no reason not to share the podcast with your loved ones.
Thanks, guys.